There's so much health advice out there, lots of different voices and opinions, but who can you trust? Trust the experts, the world's brightest medical minds, our very own Cleveland Clinic experts. We ask them tough, intimate health questions so you get the answers you need. This is the Health Essentials Podcast, brought to you by Cleveland Clinic and Cleveland Clinic Children's. This podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended to replace the advice of your own physician.
Hello, and thank you for joining us for this episode of the Health Essentials Podcast. I'm your host, Annie Zaleski, and today we're talking with urology specialist Dr. Lawrence Hakim about medical and surgical management of erectile dysfunction. Mild, moderate, or severe erectile dysfunction, or ED, strikes more than 50% of American men between ages 40 and 70. Although frequently associated with aging, ED is more likely caused by numerous diseases and conditions, both medical and psychological, as well as certain medications and surgeries. ED understandably can be a sensitive or embarrassing condition, although doctors do have a range of treatments available. Dr. Hakim is here to discuss symptoms and the diagnosis of erectile dysfunction, as well as medical and surgical treatments for the condition. Dr. Hakim, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you so much for inviting me.
So first off, tell us a little bit about your work at Cleveland Clinic. You know, what kind of research and clinical work do you do?
Yes, well, I've been at the Cleveland Clinic now well over 20 years. I'm chairman of urology. My main area of specialty is in men's health. I'm actually an endowed chair in men's health here at the Cleveland Clinic. Our department is very multidisciplinary as far as every specialty within adult urology. My practice primarily focuses on, as I said, not just men's health, but andrology, sexual dysfunction, prosthetics, we see quite a bit. Our research over the years has basically been in those areas of men's health as far as various aspects of treatments and diagnostic testing for erectile function, looking at hormone therapy. So we've been involved in a number of projects over the last many years.
Awesome. Wonderful. Well, this is, this topic today we're talking about is erectile dysfunction. So first off, define that. You know, what is kind of the medical definition of that?
Well, and I think it's important to differentiate the overall concept of sexual dysfunction, which incorporates many different types of issues, such as erectile dysfunction, let's say premature ejaculation, issues with libido or desire, peyronie's or curvature. I mean, there are many different types of sexual dysfunction. Erectile dysfunction itself is really defined as the inability to attain or maintain an erection in a man that's adequate for sexual intercourse. That's kind of when you talk about purely erectile dysfunction, that's what they're talking about, and that's what we refer to. And again, I think the important thing to understand, too, is it's not an all or none phenomenon. It's typically a spectrum. And we see many men that come in, they say, well, I don't have erectile dysfunction, I can still get some erections. But when you talk to them, their erections are very weak or they're very poorly maintained, et cetera. So there are varying degrees of erectile dysfunction. And obviously, all are treated differently depending on what the goals of the patient and their partner is. Erectile dysfunction really focuses on those issues.
Well, that's interesting because, you know, when you talk about how common it is, then, you know, I would guess that that's a little bit hard to determine then because it is such on a continuum.
Oh, well, it's true. And that's why the evaluation is so critical. And, you know, to your point about how common it is, I mean, you know, it's been shown that over 50% of men above the age of 40 alone have some degree of erectile dysfunction. And certainly as men get older, it becomes a little more prevalent. But we see erectile dysfunction in teenagers and men, you know, of all ages. And we treat men from their teens well into their 90s. So, I mean, this is a disease that can affect, you know, men at any age for various different reasons.
So what are some of the common causes of erectile dysfunction?
Yeah, I would say the most common causes are anything that affect the normal erectile physiology. And what I mean by that basically is, you know, for a normal erection, you need to have adequate blood flow, you need to have good nerve function, et cetera, you need to have good hormones, at least in a normal range. So some of the more common problems that we see in men that present with erectile problems are, for instance, men who have vascular problems like diabetes or hypertension or coronary artery disease, men who have had radical pelvic surgery, prostate surgery, bladder surgery, radiation therapy, men who have hormone issues. So again, any of problems that affect any of the causes of a normal erectile function can lead to erectile dysfunction. And medications in some cases, in younger men, we see it very often affecting men who've had injuries, sports injuries, and young men can have erectile problems. So again, there's many, many different physiologic or physical causes. In addition to sometimes there are other non-physical causes such as stress and or other more psychological. Although, for the most part, most of the men that we treat have an underlying physical cause.
What about the role of either if someone is a smoker or if someone's not in an optimal weight? Can that have an impact?
No, I think exactly for the same reason. Smoking is certainly, cigarette smoking affects blood flow, affects vascular function throughout the body, and ultimately is a major risk factor for men who develop erectile dysfunction. And it also leads to, as a result of poor blood flow, the tissues in the penis can scar and they can lose length in the penis, as they can with any erectile function. And interestingly, we tell men to stop smoking for a number of different reasons. We tell them to stop smoking because they're going to get lung cancer or bladder cancer and stuff. But when you tell them they're going to have a shorter penis, they stop smoking. So it's important for them to understand that this is a risk factor as well. I think another important thing to understand is, erectile dysfunction in and of itself is also a marker. And where that becomes critical, I think, is for many men, it's often the first sign of their vascular disease. And most men don't ever go to doctors for anything. Men are usually pretty poor patients. And so they may not see early signs of problems like coronary artery problems or hypertension or cholesterol problems. But all of these things can lead to erectile problems and due to the vasculature in the penis and the impacts that those things have. So it's not uncommon, and this also gets into the diagnostic evaluation, when we start working up these patients that come in, we'll look and find some of those vascular issues when we do look at blood flow in the erection, for instance, on a diagnostic test. And we might find, for instance, that there's arterial narrowing or poor blood flow leading to the erection problem, but they may not realize that this could be a marker, for instance, of heart disease. And not infrequently, we'll then send the patient to a cardiologist who will do a stress test, and lo and behold, they have a positive stress test and end up needing stents or surgery. So again, erectile function, we're not just talking about quality of life issues, we're talking about overall health as well.
And I think that's really important because, obviously this is something a lot of people could be embarrassed by or, they might be sensitive about it. But the fact that it's a marker for some other serious health issues makes it even more imperative that you get looked at.
Exactly. And I think, as you said before, I think that's critical too. Embarrassment is a main reason why most men don't come in very early. And I think, unfortunately, now we're in an era and an age where men can buy over-the-counter treatments or buy mail-order medications. Which may be beneficial for some, but can be very dangerous on a number of levels. First of all, you don't always know what you're getting. And the other side of it is they're ignoring that exact point that this is not a problem in and of itself, but it might be a marker of other issues, such as, we said, poor blood flow leading to heart disease, et cetera. So they're not doing themselves a service by ignoring it or not going to a physician to be evaluated.
Well, along the same lines, then I think, if you go online and start reading, there's often things that are kind of attributed to causing erectile dysfunction that in reality don't. What are some of the biggest myths in terms of causes that you come across?
Well, I think there's a number of different myths out there. I think the important thing is to recognize that the internet is probably a pretty poor resource when it comes to really understanding the underlying cause and the individual's cause and the risk factors, which is why it's so critical to be evaluated by someone who's kind of trained or specializes in this area. There's also a lot of treatments out there that are not approved, not FDA approved, not well tested, and can in some cases even cause damage potentially. So, I think you know, buyer beware. I think you have to be very careful when you, you know, try and A, self-manage, and B, look at some miracle treatments that are, you know, being advertised, whether it's on the internet or locally by, you know, certain, you know, centers. You have to be very careful about that.
So overall, then, I guess, what are some of the most common symptoms then you see associated with erectile dysfunction?
Well, you know, I think the major presentation for many men with erectile problems are they're going to tell you that they've noticed over some period of time, and often it's many months or years, that their ability to get an erection or the ability to you know, maintain the erection has diminished. They'll tell you that, you know, I used to be able to get 100% erection, now my erection's only 50% or 90% or 20% of what it used to be as far as hardness. They might tell you that it takes a lot longer for them to be able to get erect. They might tell you that, you know, they can get a partial or a full erection, but they can't maintain that erection. So, you know, I think all of those play into it. They might tell you they're having issues as a result of their poor erections, maybe with premature ejaculation. So oftentimes different sexual functions can go hand in hand. They may tell you that they're noticing problems with penile curvature at the time of erection, which makes you start thinking about other issues such as Peyronie's. So those are some of the more common ways that these men present. They may tell you that they're feeling tired, they're not feeling energetic, they're not feeling interested in sexual activity. And, you know, that might lead to you thinking about some type of hormonal problem or a hypogonadal system or something. So I think there are many different ways that these men present. Unfortunately, it's not very often that they come in immediately. And sometimes these problems have been there for quite a while. And, you know, that can have negative impacts, A, on underlying health, but also on relationship issues. Because this problem may have been going on in a marriage or some relationship for many years and causing some of the stressful issues that are associated with that as well. So, you know, I think that's one of the reasons why it's so important to address this. And, you know, and I think on another side, you know, we have to think in terms of this is not just affecting the man in this case that we're talking about with erectile problems, but it's also potentially affecting their partner. And, you know, I always say that erectile dysfunction or sexual dysfunction is a couple's disease. It's not just affecting the individual. And that could be on many levels. It could be the problem that man is having. In some situations, their partner, man or woman, might also be having sexual problems. And that can lead to further stress and further issues. So we don't just look at the individual, unlike in other diseases where, you know, let's say heart disease or other things, you're just focusing on the individual. When you're talking about erectile problems or sexual dysfunction in general, you kind of want to look at the couple as well or their partner as well.
Well, in light of that, then, you know, when someone comes in to get a diagnosis, then, you know, what kind of goes into that? And what kind of doctor, you know, do you see? You know, obviously maybe a urologist, but, you know, can a psychologist, you know, potentially come into this? Kind of walk us through that a little bit.
Yeah, I would say the primary person most men should be seeing for erectile dysfunction is a urologist, 100%. And we work very closely with other physicians, especially here at the Cleveland Clinic, for instance, and for a number of reasons. First of all, as I said, this can be associated with other problems, both urologic and non-urologic. The urologist is going to not only do a good history, do a good physical exam, but is also then going to look at what are the appropriate lab evaluations to do. Check, let's look at cholesterol, let's look at PSA, let's look at testosterone, let's look at other things that may be part of the picture. There's relatively specialized testing that are done primarily by trained urologists that can actually help make a better diagnosis and understanding what is the underlying cause. We can look at blood flow and do, let's say, a Doppler, a penile ultrasound, and, you know, sometimes using certain medications to really understand what is the blood flow situation. Is this a problem with poor filling or poor blood flow coming into the erection? Is this a problem with poor sustaining or not storing the blood well? Is there an anatomic deformity, like we mentioned before, Peyronie's, which is a very common problem, typically due to injuries during sexual activities, et cetera, that we see more and more, especially now that there are some FDA-approved treatments for it, so men are becoming more aware of it due to advertising. So, again, a urologist is really primarily positioned to be the initial evaluation for these. Now, as I mentioned, when we see problems with, let's say, lipid problems or cholesterol problems or poor blood flow, we're going to refer that patient for a cardiologic evaluation, a stress test, et cetera. When we see problems that might be non-physical, maybe it's relationship stress or other issues or psychological issues, we're going to refer them to that psychologist, psychiatrist, or sex therapist. And again, if it's an andrologic problem, sometimes the urologist will manage the hormone side, or sometimes we'll work closely with an endocrinologist. So it's a multifactorial approach, but the urologist typically is most well-positioned to be the go-to person, especially if they're trained in that area. And beyond that, the main reason is now when we start talking down the road about treatment options, who is going to be able to offer the most effective treatments? Well, certainly the urologist is best positioned for that because, while anybody can write a prescription for an oral medication, there are a lot of situations where oral medications are not either effective or appropriate for many reasons. For instance, we see men all the time who go online or have been giving the PDE5 drugs like sildenafil or tadalafil, and get them on their own and you talk to them and yet they have medical issues like heart problems and they're on nitroglycerin or nitrates, which are contraindications of these medications. So someone who's really experienced in treating this is going to really understand that. There are other types of treatment options. We can get into other medications, injection therapies, that a lot of non-urologic specialists are not going to be as comfortable and or experienced using. And then we get into the whole area of surgical treatments, and which makes up a very large part of the treatment possibilities for many men. And certainly that's where urologist is most well-trained to do that. So again, a urologist, I think, is someone who specializes especially in men's health, and sexual dysfunction and prosthetics, is going to be able to offer all of those treatments as well as refer when appropriate for the different, as I said before, multidisciplinary specialties to address their individual problem.
Well, if you do, receive a diagnosis then, what are some helpful mm-hmm. questions that someone can ask their doctor or information to share? I think what you mentioned about making sure you say, I'm taking these medications is really important. But what other information is really important to share?
Yeah, I think that's where the critical part of that initial history is so important. How long has this been going on? What other medical problems do they have? Do they have a history of heart disease? Do they have a history of lipid problems? Are they a smoker? Those are, what we're doing is looking at risk factors. Do they have some underlying neurologic problems? Have they had hormonal issues? What kind of surgical history have they had? Have they had any other major surgeries that can have an impact? Have they, especially in some of the population we deal with, we look at like PSA and look at prostate health. And, we see many men who have had prostate cancer who, after radiation therapy or medical therapy or surgical therapy, develop problems with sexual function. So I think these are the things that the doctor is going to be looking for during that history as well. A person, I think, needs to be honest about what types of sexual problems they're having and, how long this has been going on, what's the real impact, is there an impact? Sometimes we see minor or less severe forms of sexual dysfunction which really aren't having a negative impact on the couple, and that's important to understand as well.
I mean, you mentioned all the different treatments then, so let's talk about some of them then. And, I would imagine that not everyone is a good candidate for all the treatments. Some are more effective than others. Some you want to try and, before you go into something more involved. Mm-hmm. So let's talk a little bit, about some of those then. Yeah. First about lifestyle changes. Obviously quitting smoking, but exercise, dietary mm-hmm. changes, mm-hmm. weight loss, yeah. things like that.
Yeah, and I think you kind of hit on the most fundamental point, is that there's no one treatment that's right for every person or every couple. Every situation is a little different. We certainly want to offer the least invasive type of treatment that's effective for that individual, although for some men that might not be appropriate. The simplest things, as you alluded to, such as lifestyle changes, are always a positive, although in every situation they may not necessarily reverse the erectile problem. In some cases, it may slow down the progression. It might make them healthier for other reasons. I mean, certainly cholesterol issues, smoking, we talked about weight control, diabetic control, all those issues. I mean, not only are you going to improve potentially some sexual health, but their general health and, you know, prevent strokes and heart attacks and other issues. So a lot of those lifestyle changes are not only beneficial potentially for sexual health, but for general health as well.
Talk a little bit about medications then. You know, how who's a good candidate for medications?
For men, I would say the majority of men, medications typically make up a reasonable first-line therapy. You know, for like the last 25, 30 years, we've had effective oral medications for some men, such as sildenafil, tadalafil. There's a number of PDE5 inhibitor drugs that are very commonly known, for instance, a trade name such as Viagra or Cialis. For some men, especially with less severe forms of erectile function, they can be very, very excellent options in certain cases. Some, they do have some potential side effects men need to be aware of. And as we talked about briefly before, they're not indicated for everybody. I mean, there are certain men who have certain types of heart issues or other underlying health issues where those may not be appropriate or may actually be contraindicated, such as men who take any type of nitrate medication for let's say, coronary artery disease or angina, et cetera. But for men in whom there are safe alternatives, in whom they're effective, they're certainly a very reasonable treatment option to consider. In the evaluation, like I mentioned, we also look at lab evaluations and hormones. And, you know, one of the things that's so important, I think, for men to realize is that as they get older, certainly testosterone levels can diminish. And a normal or relatively normal testosterone level is important for the normal erectile function to be there. So when testosterone levels drop precipitously as men get older, or in certain cases even in younger men, you need to address that as well. And you need to be closely monitored for that. And there are many different treatment options that can help to improve testosterone levels if they're low. I think the important thing to realize is if they're normal, taking more testosterone makes no sense. In fact, you're telling your body to stop making it. And, you know, trying to be Superman or super physiologic with testosterone can be dangerous. I mean, we see men sometimes, whether it's from bodybuilding or weightlifting or just, you know, some of these other centers that pop up where they get very high doses of testosterone, their levels can be so high as to be dangerous to lead to things like stroke. So, you know, men need to be very careful with that. Number two, you know, testosterone can lead to prostate growth, which can affect PSA. So although testosterone replacement does not cause prostate cancer, and I repeat, does not cause prostate cancer and is very safe for these men, it can have an impact on their labs, and those need to be monitored closely for changes, et cetera. So that's an important factor. And if testosterone levels are very low and are untreated, certainly certain simple medications like we talked about, sildenafil, may be less effective. So it's important to, you know, try and normalize those levels as part of the treatment plan and lifestyle change, et cetera. There are different types of oral meds that we mentioned. Some are taken on demand right before sexual activity. There are some medications that are taken on a daily basis. And the advantage for some men is, number one, not only can they help with their sexual function, they can help with urinary function, which can be important as men get older. And they can also give men a degree of spontaneity that is lacking with any type of on-demand treatment, especially for sexual health. So there are certain advantages for certain medications that we look at in the individual.
Well, and you're right that it all, you know, it all depends on, you know, the person, you know, their situation. And I think, you know, there's just so many different situations and everyone's at a different kind of place. And so it really all kind of depends. Mm-hmm. And I think you really explained that well.
Right. And again, I think it's important to involve the partner. And we certainly try and do that whenever possible, because, you know, again, the treatment, the problem affects both of them. And, you know, we want to find a treatment option that's appropriate, not just for the patient, that's effective, but that is something that they can use together and that the partner has, you know, buy into. You know, in men that don't respond to oral medications, there are other types of medications such as injectable medications that were actually used as a gold standard before the pills were produced and before they were approved. And, you know, for some men, that becomes an option, too. That's something they use on demand, where they give themselves a little injection with a tiny insulin needle, which is pretty painless. And for some men, can give them adequate rigidity and erection that can be an effective treatment option for their erectile problem. There are potential downsides with that as well, so it needs to be monitored closely. It needs to be used when appropriately. And, you know, so again, it's something that needs to be treated by a urologist, by someone who can manage not only the underlying problem, but potential complications associated with the treatment option.
Well, you know, speaking of different options too, I know low intensity shockwave therapy is something that's come up, you know, talk a little bit about that and how is that effective and who's a good candidate for that?
I mean, at this point, it's still considered experimental. And, you know, the major, organizations, the Sexual Medicine Society of North America and the SEVP have put out position statements telling men that these are not FDA-approved treatment options, that they are considered experimental, and that they really, if they're going to be used, should be done in a more academic setting and in a place where, you know, where that can be done appropriately. There are no good long-term studies that show that the shockwave lithotripsy low-intensity can, you know, be an effective treatment for everybody. And, you know, there might be a role for it, and it's certainly being looked at very closely. But at this point, it's not something we recommend, certainly as a first-line therapy, for someone who's looking for something that's an FDA-approved effective treatment option. But there are studies going on in many centers around the country, and it's certainly something that people are looking at more closely. I think the other thing is there are many different forms of technologies being utilized that give those shock waves, and some may or may not be much more effective than others. So again, it's not really there yet as a treatment that we recommend. As again, it's not an FDA approved therapy for erectile problems.
Talk a little bit about implants too. I know that's come up, and that's something that, you know, that people might have read about as well.
Yeah, and I think for many men, especially men who have a more significant or severe form of erectile problems, penile implants are really the only treatment that fix their problem. And the advantages of implants are that it gives men with a more significant or severe form of erectile problems, and those typically are men who have tried pills, or they've tried injections or external devices, such as a vacuum erection device, which has been around for many years, which tends to be a little more cumbersome, not as natural. But it gives these men the ability to get and maintain a rigid erection anytime they want, on demand, for as long as they want. So it gives them really an excellent opportunity to restore their sexual function. And the satisfaction level among, you know, penile implant patients and their partners is incredible, because it does fix the problem for them. And many of our implant patients, and we do implants every week, you know, regret that they waited so long to have an implant done. So, you know, I think for many men, it's an excellent treatment option. And that goes back to what we talked about before. There's no one treatment that's right for everybody. You know, for some couples, having to take a pill every time they want to have sex, or having to give themselves an injection, even if they're effective, is not something they want to do. They want something that's going to be more spontaneous, that's going to give them, you know, the ability to have sex when they want, whenever they want, wherever they are, for as long as they want. And that's where penile implants really shine, in that they give men that ability. It's a 30-40 minute procedure, typically done as an outpatient. And again, it's completely concealed. No one knows it's there except the man or the couple that are using it. And it has no effect on their urinary function, sensitivity. It's just there to give them the quality of erection. And again, for the men and couples in whom other treatment options are not ideal or are ineffective or contraindicated, it fixes the problem. And that's one of the reasons that penile implant surgery has become so popular.
So are there any other treatments we haven't talked about that you want to point out or mention or that, you know, are popular or things that you recommend?
Yeah, certainly. Well, I think, you know, we mentioned briefly the use of a vacuum device, a vacuum erection device, which is basically a simple cylinder, some used often with a little constricting ring, very commonly used in what we would consider like penile rehabilitation or someone, for instance, a man who's had prostate surgery and has initial loss of erectile function to help not only maintain some of the length, but also to maybe improve blood flow and potentially help restore their function sooner. I think another area of sexual problems in erectile that are often associated with erectile problems are in the area of Peyronie's disease. And we see this much, much more, not that it's more common now, but men, I think, are more willing to come in and talk about it more. And in part because, like I said, there are now FDA-approved treatment options, so men are more aware that they're not alone and that there are opportunities for them to be treated. And we see many men each day with Peyronie's. And so there are specific medications, in addition to some of the treatments we talked about, that can be effective for those men as well. There's what we call intralesional therapies, which are medications that are actually injected into the scar tissue or the plaque of the Peyronie's to help improve penile curvature or straightening. There are external devices, stretching devices that can be used in conjunction with that that help improve loss of penile length and also enhance straightening. There are many very effective surgical treatment options for men that don't respond to the simple treatments to help them restore a more normal sexual function, more erectile, a normal erectile function. And even penile prosthetics can be very effective for men who have combination of severe erectile problems as well as Peyronie's. So, I think the take-home message is that the problem can always be fixed. And I think that's really something that very few areas of medicine can tell patients. You know, and that's one of the most amazing parts of our field within men's health, of sexual health, is that almost regardless of the problem, it could certainly be improved and often always be fixed. There are many different treatment options out there. There's not one that's right for everybody. But depending on what the underlying problem is, that can often be addressed, or the end result can lead to much more normal erectile function, whether it's with medication or surgery, et cetera. Again, the first step is men need to make that first step and see someone who's really trained to deal with this and not rely on the internet or going to someone who doesn't, you know, really focus on this area, because your options at that point are going to be much more limited. And you know, again, the negative we talked about before is you might be missing a severe underlying problem that needs to be addressed as well. So, again, this is a multifocal, multidisciplinary approach. But the beauty is that it could always be fixed. And I think that's one of the, you know, important take-home messages that men and couples and their partners need to understand.
So when people do get treatment, then how quickly can people see results then?
Well, depending on the treatment option, they can often see results immediately. Sometimes even in the office, I mean, depending on the type of injection therapy is used, some of the responses are immediate. But, you know, many of the men, especially with a more minimal to moderate erectile problems, can see improvement in their function almost immediately with medications. And like I said, depending on the underlying degree of the problem will depend on the type of therapy and ultimately the type of response that they get. But, you know, it's something that can always be improved.
So, you know, you mentioned that, you know, understandably, people might be reluctant to go to the doctor or reluctant to talk about this then. Do you have any tips for people on either how to make this easier or ways they can kind of talk about this?
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, first of all, you want to have an honest conversation with your partner, ideally. And that's sometimes the hardest thing for many, especially if they've been in a long-term relationship. You know, we see that as a problem. And, you know, the problem is when they don't talk about it, the sexual function or the sexual side of their relationship can go away, and that can lead to other stressors and other problems and lack of communication. So, you know, and men by definition are horrible communicators. So it's true. I mean, so I think that's important for men to try and communicate this problem, you know, with their partner. The next important thing is, as I mentioned earlier, you need to seek out somebody who's really specialized in the area. You know, if you had a brain tumor, you're not going to go to an internist, or you're not going to go to, you know, someone who doesn't specialize in that treatment. You need to go to someone who's going to do the right workup, who's going to give you reasonable options, who's going to understand what the underlying problem is, and really address the whole picture. And, you know, I think, you know, that's really the take-home message, is that you need to make that first step. You need to seek out somebody who has that expertise. And, you know, most major cities, there are people at the Cleveland Clinic. You have amazing people at all the clinic centers where the, you know, that really focus on men's health and in their practice. And more importantly, or as importantly, is you have at a place like the Cleveland Clinic, you have that multidisciplinary approach. You know, you're not just looking at it from the purely from the urologic side, but you're looking at it, you know, from the, is there a cardiologic problem? Is there a cardiology problem? Is there an androgen problem? You have to see an endocrinologist. Is there, you know, some other problem? Is there a lipid problem you're going to see your internist for? And the team works together to try and not only improve sexual function, but to improve health in general. And, you know, anything that you can do to improve health can potentially help improve sexual health as well.
For partners then, you know, who might be dealing with a partner who is having issues and might be obviously distressed about it, you know, what sort of advice do you have for them?
Well, you know, it depends. I mean, number one, is the partner distressed because of the male's erectile function? And if that's the issue, again, it goes back to communication and trying to get to the right person for them to be evaluated. If it's a female partner, sometimes, you know, we see that sexual dysfunction in women is as common as it is in men. And, you know, there are certainly many different reasons for that. And, you know, they need to also be evaluated. And very often we'll see, you know, a couple who's been married for many years, the woman might be postmenopausal or have had some other procedures that have led to problems with her sexual function. And we can't just treat the male side and give better erection without addressing that as well, because that's not going to fix the problem, because she might be having issues with, you know, pain issues or other types of arousal issues and orgasm issues. And those need to be addressed, or you're not going to improve their quality of their sexual relationship if you're missing half of the equation. So I think that's why I said before that, you know, erectile problems and sexual dysfunction is a couple's disease. You know, it's something you really need to look at as well. And, you know, while the urologist may or may not be the expert in the let's say in a female sexual dysfunction side, you know, there are many doctors out there who do specialize in that, that can address, maybe it's a hormonal problem, maybe it's some other issue that needs to be addressed. And again, maybe there's stress issues that need to be evaluated, you know, with a psychologist, et cetera. So again, it's multifactorial, multidisciplinary, and it involves both the patient and their partner.
How often then is something like maybe couples therapy part of treatment then as someone is going along?
Yeah, it depends. I mean, it's not uncommon, you know, couples therapy as far as, you know, psychology or sex therapy. You know, oftentimes if there are physical issues that can be addressed, maybe a little less necessary because you address those physical issues. And if there are no underlying, you know, psychological stressors, then that kind of can fix the problem. But when appropriate, I think it's an excellent option to offer couples. And, you know, anything, again, that can help bring their communication better, that can lead to improved, you know, that can lead to improved health, can improve their relationship as well.
Well, this has been a great comprehensive conversation today. Is there anything else you want to add?
No, I think we've kind of hit most of the topics. I mean, again, the take-home message is, you know, for men and for women, you're not alone. This is a problem that affects more than half of men over 40. And again, it can occur at any age. And there are experts out there that can help you, and there are excellent treatment options out there. And it can always be fixed and always be improved. So, but you need to make the first step. And if, you know, once you do that, hopefully, you know, the problem can be addressed.
Excellent. Dr. Hakeem, thank you so much for being here today.
No, thank you so much. It's a pleasure. Thank you.
If you're experiencing erectile dysfunction, a urologist can help you figure out the best treatment so you can resume living your life. Visit www.clevelandclinic.org/urology or call 216 216- 844-5600 for Cleveland appointments or 954-659-5188 for appointments in Florida.
Thank you for listening to Health Essentials, brought to you by Cleveland Clinic and Cleveland Clinic Children's. To make sure you never miss an episode, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or visit clevelandclinic.org/HEpodcast. You can also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram for the latest health tips, news, and information.